This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A breach in the Mount Polly Mine Tailings Pond Dam on August 4, 2014 released an estimated 10 million cubic meters of water and 4.5 million cubic meters of mine wastes into Polly Lake. Mount Polly Mine is an open pit copper and gold mine with a developing underground project located in south central British Columbia. So-called tailings ponds include potentially hazardous waste left over from mining operations. Tailings ponds are supposed to be held in a place and eventually closed with minimum environmental impact. The contaminated slurry released from the tailings pond at Mount Polly Mine flowed through Hazeltine Creek and eventually into a pristine lake called Quesnel Lake. Mount Polly spill has been called one of the biggest environmental disasters in modern Canadian history.
But now it seems just over a month later that news about Mount Polly is barely making it to British Columbians, let alone any farther. BC's new Democratic Party leader John Horgan says that Premier Christy Clark and the governing BC Liberals briefly swooped into Likely, BC, a town near the spill, several days after the tailings pond failure. According to Horgan, the Premier and her entourage assured the town everything was all right, but then disappeared as worse news rolled in. BC New Democrats state that the people in communities directly affected by the Mount Polly disaster are living day to day with news of water advisories. Many of them are out of work at the mine and they're wondering where their government is. Concerns are growing as fall rains and winter will be setting in without those most affected even knowing what the plan is for the massive cleanup effort.
We have two interviews to share today. The first is with Skeed Borkowski, who together with his wife Sharon has owned and operated the Northern Lights Lodge for decades on the shores of Quesnel Lake. Kevin spoke with him earlier this week, and here's what he had to say.
Skeed, your business is particularly vulnerable to environmental conditions. What's been happening with your business?
You know, that's really too soon to say, other than we had a mass exodus of people that were staying here. We had a lot of the mine people that had actually rented long-term. Because of that, we'd kind of changed our profile a bit and had cut back on our fly fishing program considerably. You know, we put about 40 or 50 people through this year in our fly fishing trips. But when the breach happened, it was just like a ghost town here. It was overnight. And so our business left entirely. So it's a little different around here now.
You're on Quesnel Lake, is that correct?
On the lake where the Hazeltine Creek comes into Quesnel Lake. We have a 2,000 feet of water frontage here with, I think, about 8 cabins plus the main lodge and 3 residents. And, you know, it's quite a large piece of property that we managed to work on for a lot of years, and it's just changed.
Has Quesnel Lake been directly affected?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of people just look at the visual is the surface debris. I think because of a lot of the mindset, you know, just tends to look at the visual part of things where, you know, there are logs and this and that floating around and that, you know, they are being cleaned up. That part of it is being cleaned up and the brush piles are being burnt. There's a lot of effort going into it. It's what lies beneath, you know, that's the biggest concern for me. And, you know, it's what's on the bottom, what's still floating, you know, the plume that is so large. And we're getting ready for the lake to turn, which is probably in November sometime. And that'll be a whole new story again. And we will not see the impact of what it will do to this fishery for a number of years.
What do you mean when you say the lake will turn?
There's an inversion in most lakes, like most still water, where the lake actually flips over and you get residue from the bottom that comes to the top. And it's typically it happens twice a year. You know, a lot of the small lakes, you'll be fishing on the water or whatever during a certain period of time in the spring and in the fall, and all of a sudden you notice all these dead leaves and everything around, and the lakes actually turn. That's just a part of their cycle. just replenishes the system. And but unfortunately, there's so much sediment in the bottom of this lake in areas that this sediment, and it's so light that in my eyes, and I'm sure there will be professionals that will, you know, people that are qualified to answer this question, I think there will be a tendency to agree that this will continue for many years to come.
Skeed, how has your life and Sharon's life, your daily life, changed as a result of this?
We look at things so much differently now. Like we took this lake so for granted. I mean, we just drank the water. We lived here. We never even thought twice about it. We lived on the safest place on the planet. We now look at the water. It doesn't matter what the powers that be say. They're not the ones that are drinking this water. We're not either. You know, regardless of what Interior Health tells us or MOE, to me it'll never be the same. I'll never have the same feeling about this water. Sharon and I are both the same. I'm 66. Sharon is 64. We moved here to spend 1 year when we were first married, and that was over 45 years ago. And, I mean, this is where we chose to be and chose where to live out our lives. And now I'm just not sure of it anymore. I'm just, it's had a real impact on just how we feel about the whole place. We love it, but it's just different.
What are you seeing in the community around you? How are other people coping with this?
We're pro-industry. Sharon and I are pro-industry. We had to do a lot of different things in our life and enjoyed it. I mean, we were loggers and tree planters and were in business here for many years. The community is somewhat split. I know there are folks that don't think it's a big deal, but there are also people that are not involved on the water or attached to the water in any way. And people that are working at Mount Pauley Mine, friends of ours that work at Mount Pauley Mine, and they always will be friends. And I don't know that some folks truly appreciate what has happened to this lake. And one of the things that has happened, there's a blanket that's been put on the bottom of this lake that will extinguish a lot of life down there. A lot of aquatic life will disappear, and that's where the food chain begins. It begins with the freshwater shrimp, plankton. We have our stoneflies, caddisflies, everything that our fish eat. Our salmon fry depend on, you know, these microorganisms to sustain them until they're ready to go back to the ocean. And there's a part of this lake that will be dead because of that.
When I called to speak with you a little bit earlier, Sharon told me you were meeting with representatives of the provincial government. What's developing in those discussions?
This is folks in the opposition. They're wanting to know what response we're receiving from government. Basically, we're old news now. I really feel that we don't have the population here that really packs any kind of a wallop as far as, you know, having any kind of credibility or, I guess, any worth to the to the powers that be, the government. We're kind of out of sight, out of mind. Basically, there are four businesses here that have been impacted, four or five businesses that have been, you know, severely impacted. That's only four businesses in the whole scope of things. I really feel we don't really count out here. We're just a bunch of backwoods folks. It's not an eye-opener. We always knew this, but that's why we chose to live here, is to get away from that mindset. But we're really affected by it now because I really don't feel anybody really does give a rat's ass. So, and I am bitter about that. You know, we requested a little bit of help from the provincial government. When Christy Clark came to our community, it was a beautiful sunny day. Everything was just right. It was after the breach, and it's when they got their, you know, first water samples back, and everything was fine. The porridge was just right. The water had not gone past likely at that point. And it was such a superficial meeting. I just found it very condescending and very, it was more of an American Idol type of a setting. And I, you know, I was a staunch supporter of her party. I know I'm not anymore. I wish our government would step up to the plate and help the people actually affected by this. The businesses in town, we've made a request for, you know, emergency funding, no different than First Nations received, much smaller amount, and just something to, you know, that we can do some damage control with. We're going to have to start a new marketing program, just some way that we can possibly survive this this mess. We're not looking for handouts. We're just looking for something that should be there, something that a government should do. And that is one of their responsibilities, is to take care of its citizens. And I don't think they're doing a very good job of it.
Skeed, thank you very much for taking the time to join us and for being so open about the struggle that this really is.
Oh, it's bizarre. It's like a dream you don't wake up from, and it's something we've Sharon and I've worked for 45 years to get to the point where, okay, now we can retire. We don't have a pension plan, like you know, a lot of people that. that are in government that serve two terms and receive a pension plan. We've worked all our lives, and our pension plan is the lodge that we've built up here and the business we've built up. And when somebody pulls the plug on that, it's not a very good feeling. So, but anyway, thank you very much, Kevin, and pleasure speaking with you.
That was Skeed Borkowski, who together with his wife Sharon owns and operates the Northern Lights Lodge on the shores of Quesnel Lake.
We're talking about the Mount Polly Mine Tailings Pond spill that occurred in British Columbia on August the 4th, 2014. It was a tailings pond that wasn't supposed to fail, but then it did. The Mount Polly spill has been called one of the biggest environmental disasters in modern Canadian history. BC New Democrats have been pointedly critical of the province's ruling Liberal Party for their response or lack of response to the Mount Polly disaster. Spender Chandra Herbert is the official opposition environment spokesperson on behalf of BC's New Democratic Party. The NDP forms the official opposition in the provincial legislature. I spoke with Chandra Herbert earlier this week. Here's that interview. You toured the Mount Polly mine breach site along with NDP MLA Norm MacDonald and Imperial Metals engineer Don Parsons. What did you see while you were there?
To see the scale of the devastation, we got right to where the tailings dam failed and failed catastrophically, as we know now. And then we got around to Polly Lake, which took a bunch of tailings, and then, of course, Hazeltine Creek, where the majority of the tailings got washed out. What was shocking to see when I visited, which was not quite a month after the break occurred, but was that the tailings at the time were continuing to spill out of the breached dam, the broken dam, into Hazeltine Creek and washed down into Quesnel Lake. So nearly a month after the disaster had occurred, the disaster was still occurring. I didn't see any government personnel on staff and or around, and really just continued environmental devastation. They were trying to close the dam break, and since then I've just heard they've finally closed it over a month after it first broke. But, you know, we got down on the lake, and you could see the water was cloudy with tailings. You could see it was full of debris, which had washed down the mountain and into the lake. And the locals would tell me that, you know, right here we used to be able to see straight down to the bottom, 20 feet below. Now we look, you couldn't see anything. Just there's that amount of suspended tailings in that lake.
You pointed out that the BC government is sending conflicting messages on this, or has been over time. Tell us more about how the government has been responding.
Well, I think what we've found is that the government talks tough, but then doesn't do anything. So it was nearly about a month after the dam broke that the government sent a kind letter saying, hey, basically, we see that the tailings continue to spill. Could you kindly close that up for us, please? There have been no fines issued, no penalties. And I'm really concerned that, given the Liberals' track record, the company is just going to get a little slap on the wrist. And meanwhile, the citizens of Likely and the people that rely on that lake have been hugely hurt by this. Some businesses there are telling me they've lost over $50,000 in the last month and a bit because all of a sudden their tourism bookings, they got canceled because people didn't want to come to what they saw as a disaster site. And a lot of these folks, you know, that was their best season, August, September. And with those bookings gone, there's no way that they can make up that money. So, you know, when an environmental disaster like this happens, an industrial disaster like this happens, there are real costs, not just to the environment, but also the people that rely on the water for their living or to drink. When you've got tailings floating in your water, I can completely understand why people don't want to drink it.
Tell us more about those wide-ranging effects of the spill. And you mentioned tourism, for example, food services and employment, individual family well-being. What have you heard while you were there, and what are your thoughts about this going forward?
Really, people's sense of tension and stress, you know, shot right up. They're not used to being the center of attention, and Likely, it's a small community. But I've also heard of people saying, you know, this is going to hurt their jobs long term because of the disaster. But not just in Likely, but also people who work in mining who've said things like, because the government hasn't managed our environment well, hasn't protected it, hasn't made sure that the balance has actually met between industrial jobs and the need to protect our environment, why would the public ever believe the government when they claim they have world-class standards? You know, Mount Polly wasn't supposed to fail. It was supposed to be one of the safer dams in the province. But, of course, it did. So a lot of people really, really not trusting the BC Liberal government anymore and saying, why should I support mining when, of course, our province to a large extent has been built on mining? Nanaimo, of course, a very big mining community in the past. People just saying that this doesn't work for us anymore. And that's challenging because there are a lot of people who work in mining and there is a lot of money that the province makes from mining. But if the cost of doing mining is environmental devastation, health impacts, financial impacts, people start going, is this the right balance? Is this what we should be doing? And I understand that. I think we do need mining. We do need good jobs from mining. But you have to protect the environment. And clearly, the government has not cared. They cut tons of staff who do that protection, do the inspections. So there is nobody on the ground in this province protecting our interests in many places because the BC government laid them off.
Have individual British Columbians become desensitized to news about harm being caused to the environment? Or do you think there's a possibility that this disaster will lead to an increasing awareness?
You know, I think I've certainly sensed an increasing awareness on the need to protect our land, our air, and our water, because people are connecting the dots. It's, you know, in terms of, say, climate change, for example, if we continue to pollute the atmosphere, it used to be that we thought, well, the costs might come down the road when climate change hits. But it's hitting us now, and we're seeing that, you know, up island where there's shellfish farms, which are seeing, because of the acidity in the water, that the shellfish are dying, and so they're losing millions. We've seen that with the pine beetle epidemic throughout the province, where the pine beetle didn't get killed because the winters didn't get cold enough anymore, and so a lot of wood was killed, a lot of jobs were lost, and mills were closed, costing us, I would argue, at least $1 billion. So the cost is here. And when you see Mount Polly, you go, yes, we made revenue from selling the ore, selling the products that came out of the mine. But if you don't do it right, the cost to clean up the damage you've created could be even greater than what you've made. So are we any farther ahead? No, if we do it badly. So I think the public has is very aware of that now in a way that 20 years, 30 years ago, we might not have been. Because the evidence of environmental destruction can be seen all around us if we look.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation today?
In the end, it's all of our Earth. We've all got to treat it like we're saving it for future generations, that we're conserving, that we're preserving, that it's not just a race to the finish to dig everything out, chop it all down, make the most money in our lifetimes and leave the damage for the future. But we have to work in relationship with the Earth, not in domination or exploitation, but in relation of how much can it give us, but how much can we give it back? Because otherwise we're just stuck in a boom-bust cycle of destruction and then paying the cost afterwards. No longer can we leave these problems to our children. We have to address them today.
Spencer Chandra Herbert, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, and I hope you have a great day.
Spencer Chandra Herbert is a member of the Legislative Assembly for Vancouver West End Coal Harbour in the British Columbia Legislature. He's also the official environment spokesperson for BC's New Democratic Party.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.